on Annenberg Radio News.
It's like Survivor, except with people saying that they don't like homophobia or misogyny or racism.
We hear from a married couple who want to make gaming more friendly to women and minorities. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Wednesday, October 15th, 2014. I'm Carrie Poppy. The Centers for Disease Control is contacting all passengers who were aboard Flight 1443, the same flight that had nurse Amber Joy Vinson. She was diagnosed with Ebola 2 days ago, the second such case in the United States. They said she should not have flown commercially. However, it should be known that symptoms are not apparent until a day after contact. Although the risk is low for receiving Ebola, the CDC does want to continue contacting passengers. County and state public health officials held news conferences today to talk about how they're preparing for Ebola. Taylor Haney has this report.
LA County officials say they're making sure hospitals are thoroughly training their staff. Director of Communicable Diseases, Robert Kim Farley, says health workers are practicing how to use the proper protective equipment to treat Ebola patients.
And this is standard equipment that is used in hospitals all the time for other patients that have infectious diseases. What I think is important is the recognition that Ebola is a very unforgiving virus.
State officials said 2 people have tested negative for the disease, one in Los Angeles County and one in Sacramento. More than 4,000 people have died from Ebola in West Africa. Taylor Haney, Annenberg Radio News.
The spread of Ebola has been a major concern in many countries, and the disease is now leading to other deadly diseases going untreated. There is a widespread fear of catching Ebola in hospitals in West African countries. Sine Larson has more.
The Ebola outbreak has overwhelmed healthcare workers in West Africa, and many of those who desperately need medical help are afraid to enter hospitals and clinics. Andrew McCullough, head of the international program for the aid organization Direct Relief, says the number of patients has dramatically fallen.
JFK Hospital in Monrovia, the capital of Liberia, typically sees about 150 patients a day. And back in 2 months ago, they were down to 2 patients one day. The next day they had none.
McCullough also says that's not the only problem facing hospitals and healthcare workers.
Because of the diversion of resources towards Ebola, most hospitals' pharmacies are completely stocked out of supplies that they typically would have.
All these changes have hit some vulnerable groups harder than others. Abdul Jalal, the executive director of Medical Research Center in Sierra Leone, says the threat of Ebola has kept certain patients away from seeking treatments, especially pregnant women.
Now the attendance is about 30% of what it used to be. And the reason is there was some time back where somebody got infected, one of the health workers, and about 3 to 4 of them died. And that scare off the mothers coming for treatment, scare off the pregnant women coming for treatment, and that really impacts now. And a lot of other people, when they are pregnant, they rather go somewhere else to deliver instead of coming to the health facilities.
Despite recent efforts to improve separation of Ebola patients from the rest of the patient population, Jala says without more outside funding, those improvements will be difficult to sustain. Sine Larsen, Annenberg Radio News.
Vector control officials announced today they have discovered a non-native variety of mosquito that can carry yellow fever. This type of mosquito was found in the Commerce and Pico Rivera neighborhoods last week. The insect is active during the day, and they're aggressive. Residents are asked to report any small, black-and-white striped mosquitoes to health officials. Over the past 3 years, officials have found 3 breeds of non-native mosquitoes that are capable of carrying serious diseases. Hate crimes in LA County dropped by 17% last year to 384. This is the lowest number since officials began collecting data in 1980. As Kelly O'Mara reports, the number of attacks against Jews and gays dropped the most, but they're still the biggest targets.
The good news is that hate crimes in LA are on the decline. But, as in years past, African Americans are still the biggest target for attacks, followed by gays and lesbians, Jews, and Latinos. In one incident, a black man walking down the street in Duarte was attacked by 2 Latino men, beaten until he blacked out, and robbed. Sheriff John Scott emphasized that the work is not yet done.
Los Angeles County is a melting pot of diversity, but we do not want it becoming a boiling pot of hate and intolerance.
On the plus side, the number of crimes targeting gay men and Jews both dropped by almost half. Anti-Jewish crimes do still make up almost three-quarters of all religion-based crimes. This year, there was also a brief spike in anti-Semitic attacks over the summer when Israel and Gaza were exchanging fire. Most hate crimes, though, are not religiously motivated, but are motivated by racial hatred. African Americans are the primary victims, followed by Latinos. The report shows that Blacks and Latinos most commonly target each other. Commission Director Robin Thoma said attacks are often sparked by racial epithets, and as neighborhoods change demographically, hate crimes tend to rise, too.
There is racism alive and well.
Crimes against trans people were one of the few types of hate crimes that increased this year, and every single one of these crimes was violent. Chris Argyros from the LA LGBT Center said the rise in the number is both discouraging and encouraging.
It's a little bit of a double-edged sword. I actually am happy to see that there are more being reported.
Danielle Nava, who has the California Conference for Equality and Justice, said that even if we don't think hate crimes involve us, we still have a role in stopping hatred.
It is our problem as a society. And so for us to be able to recognize hate speech when we hear it, for us to catch our own biases and stereotypes, those are things and ways that actually do influence.
Think you don't have any biases? The commission has developed an online test for people to find out about their unconscious biases and prejudices. Take the test at withinourlifetime.net. Kelly O'Mara, Annenberg Radio News.
For the first time, the Los Angeles City Attorney is filing charges against a parent for allowing her son to take a loaded weapon to school. Leah Wilkin is charged with four criminal counts, which each carry a maximum of a year in jail. As Daniel Jimenez reports, the city attorney is teaming with an anti-gun group to prevent these kinds of incidents in the future.
City Attorney Mike Feuer gave details of the case today at a downtown news conference. He says the 17-year-old student brought a loaded .45-caliber semi-automatic to Will Rogers High School in Van Nuys in May. A fellow student reported seeing the gun in his backpack to the principal.
This was particularly disconcerting because this young man, who allegedly had the gun, had had an altercation with another student just the day before.
Feuer says school police found the gun and bullets in the student's backpack. Then police went to the student's home.
And at that home, they were denied access to the property. They were there, of course, to determine whether there were other guns at the site. Then they went back to the school. And ultimately, the student, the same day, did provide to law enforcement the gun.
The Los Angeles School Unified District is partnering with the group Women Against Gun Violence to educate students about storing guns safely. Executive Director Margaret Bennett says the group has a new program called Talk.
It's T, talk with your kids about guns. A, ask your family, friends, and neighbors if their guns are locked up. L, lock your guns up. K, keep our community safe.
Earlier this year, the city attorney started the Neighborhood School Safety Program at several LA schools. It addresses issues of gun violence and safe passage to school. Daniel Jimenez, Annenberg Radio News.
California officials say the state needs a warning system for quakes, even if the warning is only a few seconds. Utility, healthcare, transportation, and water sector representatives all testified to a state Senate committee today in support of a bill requiring all emergency officials to be prepared for a quake. California Institute of Technology, the USC, and others are working on an early earthquake warning system. State officials say it will be about 2 years before it's ready. Tomorrow, Los Angeles will hold the Great California Shakeout. Join the drill at 10:16 a.m. tomorrow. The weather is a perfect 74 degrees, the exact temperature that movie theater chains tend to keep their thermostats during the summer. Wind is at 1 mile an hour, the walking speed of a giant tortoise, and the humidity is at 51%, a great humidity for growing tomatoes. So bring your favorite tortoise to the movie theater and don't forget those tomatoes. Later on Annenberg Radio News, looking to India to ground yourself? A culture clash says look somewhere else. Republican gubernatorial candidate Neil Kashkari dropped in on a Glendale charter school today to highlight his emphasis on education. As David Hodari reports, Kashkari wants the charter school program to become the norm.
The classroom fell quiet at the Alliance Environmental Science and Technology High School as Neil Kashkari entered and asked for questions.
We have to learn from the best charter schools in the state and bring some of these best practices to our traditional public schools. My education plan is to completely change the way we fund our schools so the money goes right to the school site so the principal and the teachers and the parents have control over it. And then we free them from the thousands of pages of education code that micromanage our traditional public schools and allow them to innovate like this school.
The principal of the school, Andres Versage, has been working in charter schools for the past 10 years. He praised Kashkari's attempts to grow the program, though he acknowledged the importance of Governor Jerry Brown's generous funding.
I do appreciate that this year we've been getting new money from the state under local control with charter schools, get support from our home office, and at the school site we're able to address the specific needs that we have. Having worked in public schools previously, I definitely think that that would be something that would be beneficial.
Award-winning LA Times writer Howard Bloom said that Kashkari's greatest difficulty in the education debate and the election in general is simply being heard over the popular Governor Brown.
If he crosses that hurdle, then the debate over education could actually make for a very elevated discussion.
According to RealClearPolitics.com, Kashkari is polling at an average of 35% to Brown's 54%. You don't need a high school diploma to see that the election is unlikely to be a close one. David Hodari, Annenberg Radio News.
According to the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, better known as the EEOC, age discrimination has been going up over the last few years. Members of the baby boomer generation are entering their 60s and 70s, and changes in the employment industry makes the terrain for older workers even trickier than before. Rocky Natha speaks to several experts to understand the extent to which age discrimination is an issue in the workplace.
Age discrimination in the workplace refers to employees in the workplace above 40 years of age. It comes into play when employees are forced out of jobs for the sole reason that they are too old, not because they lack any skills or expertise. Professor Mark Levine specializes in gerontology.
It's very widespread, much more widespread than any other type of discrimination. And surprisingly, a type of discrimination that many people think is okay, is legitimate.
Levine says there may be a higher number of age discrimination complaints, in part due to the recession.
The job market as a whole is quite bad. And when the job market is bad, there are fewer jobs for anyone. And this has hurt the elderly in particular as they try to seek new employment.
But why is age discrimination an issue? Why does this discrimination occur?
Sometimes you ask and they'll say old workers just are not as good. They're not flexible. They don't have new ideas.
Levine also happens to be a psychoanalyst and says there might be unconscious reasons why age discrimination occurs.
Whether the older workers remind them of their parents or whether the older workers remind them that they too may grow old and die and they don't want to face that. Or whether they just feel uncomfortable supervising someone older than they are.
Howard Rutten, an employment attorney, explains that although many complaints are lodged, proving age discrimination is not easy.
Most of the time there aren't direct comments made. And what happens is the person will be told that the position's been eliminated, there's a restructuring, something like that. And then the company will turn around and hire a younger worker for less money. But that happens across the board in all types of industries.
Some younger workers say older workers are not as quick to pick up on new technology. But Mark Schmidt, who heads up a human resources firm, says that is not the case.
There's many studies that have shown that actually the increased use of social media is increasing most around older workers, for example. And increase in use of new technologies is not any different between younger and older groups. So, there's a fair amount of research that debunks some of these myths, but people still tend to hold those kinds of myths, and that can lead to disparate treatment within organizations.
Age discrimination is not legal and not easy to prove, but experts say it's likely to continue. Rocky Nathar reporting for Annenberg Radio News.
LA Mayor Garcetti announced the funding of an initiative to better coordinate rapid response teams and the LAPD in tackling domestic violence. He also announced the launch of the city's first program to help end elder abuse. Vanessa Okoth-Obo brings us up to speed.
It's a real honor to stand here today surrounded by partners in our struggle against domestic violence. I'd like to recognize first and foremost somebody who's been a great leader locally, state, and then now locally again.
Crime statistics show that Los Angeles is safer overall now than it was in the 1950s. But the number of reported cases of domestic violence, assaults, and sexual abuse has gone up. There has also been an increase in reported incidents of elder abuse. The Department of Justice and Verizon teamed up to give more than $1 million to better train police staff and domestic abuse response teams, or DART, to work together to stop this trend. Susan Strick, the city's elder abuse prosecutor, said the training will boost some of the measures already in place.
There's work being done. This training of law enforcement just gives us an extra opportunity to make sure that people understand the nuance of elder abuse and the codependency of elder abuse and the vulnerability of our elders in the city of Los Angeles.
Garcetti said that a combination of DART and LAPD officers when responding to reported crimes works best. Collaboration between the two groups will lead to more efficient emotional assistance and security on the scene.
We have DART coverage of every police division, but to put a DART team in every single police division. It's been a goal of mine since I was a council member, and we've seen some steady growth, but until we have one actually assigned to every single station, I think we won't have as robust a system as possible.
Some wondered whether the funding would be shared with organizations that work on the front lines of domestic abuse. Jaleesa Lendo, program director at Amanecer Community Counseling Services, helps victims of domestic and elder abuse often, and collaborates with the LAPD.
When it comes down to the nonprofit agency such as myself, the money, we really don't see it. It becomes a struggle for us to get funding. The money's out there, but we don't get to see it. I wish we can, because the need is out there. Client services are required, and we can have an additional funds and additional staffing if we had more money. But I don't get to see it, unfortunately. I don't know where it goes.
A change in the way elder abuse is defined has led to an increase in the number of reported incidents. Law enforcement officers and prosecutors will be trained to identify and support older victims of domestic violence. Vanessa Okoth-Obo, Annenberg Radio News.
Feminist writer and video game critic Anita Sarkeesian canceled her speech today at Utah State University after receiving death threats. Sarkeesian has published a series of videos criticizing the depiction of women in games. She canceled the lecture after receiving an email threatening a school shooting if she spoke. She tweeted that she did not cancel her lecture because of the email itself, but rather because she felt security measures in place would not be adequate. The gaming community has been riddled with conflict for several months over so-called Gamergate. Some players, critics, and game creators believe gaming isn't exactly friendly to women and minorities. I spoke to Lindsay and David Pavlis, a wife and husband who both work in the gaming industry and advocate for inclusivity in gaming. So you both are gamers.
That's my profession? Yeah, we'll go with it. Yeah.
It's my passion.
Yes, your pro-passion.
Pro-passion, yes.
And so but you both work kind of like in the same arena with gaming in that, Lindsay, you host a podcast called
Girlfriend Mode.
Yeah, and what's that about?
It is a podcast hosted by my friend Alice and myself. And it's kind of just a discussion about what we're playing, what we're looking forward to. And I think there's other shows like that out there, but we weren't really hearing any from our perspective.
I think the Lisa Frank aesthetic also repels any haters.
Yeah. Also, yeah, it very clearly speaks to what it is. Like, as soon as you visit the website, it's bright
okay.
and colorful. And
okay.
So I think anyone who would be inclined to be, you know, a hater would be like, out from the get-go.
Well, I'm with you until I think of the bronies. I don't know.
You're not wrong. I guess they just haven't found us yet.
Oh, good.
I say, great.
Well, fingers crossed. And then, and Davin, you also work in gaming.
I do.
And so I don't exactly know what you do.
I don't
this
either.
This is what I picture. I picture that there's people storming a gate, and then you come out and you say, no, no, everybody, it is a peaceful town. And then they say, okay, Davin. And then they all walk around peacefully and everybody's happy. Is that your job?
No, not quite. My job is research, but I guess the part of my job that you're referring to is research in player behavior. So how we can figure out ways that the community can police itself to sort of express standards and sort of hold each other accountable. So we do things on the game that I work on, like have rating systems where people can provide positive and negative feedback to each other.
Okay.
And if you accrue enough negative feedback, then you go to a community-run tribunal where people vote on whether the behaviors you exhibited that led to negative feedback are punishable.
So it's like Survivor.
It's like Survivor, except with people saying that they don't like homophobia or misogyny or racism. So it's like Survivor.
Nice. So, I mean, what I really like about you, too, is that you're both sort of like fighting for equality in gaming.
Yeah, definitely. I think that that's really important to both of us, but also making sure that other voices are heard. And
I mean, I'm a generic white guy who has an advanced degree, so for me, it's more important to use that to let other people talk. Like, it's useful for me to say things, but it's more useful to allow communities to express themselves or to allow marginalized voices to express themselves. So, for example, I could be that person at the gate, like, shouting for people to be nice, or I could help hold up that mirror and allow people to see that most people are nice and allow those nice people to sort of be that change.
So, Lindsay, where can people find your show?
Girlfriendmode.com. And if you search for Girlfriend Mode in iTunes, it should come up there as well.
Cool. And Davin, where can people find out about your work?
Oh, they can just search my name on Google. I'm Davin with an N, Pavlis with a P. Or they can go play League of Legends. That's the game I work on.
Great. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you.
Bye.
Yeah.
So good.
That was Lindsay and Davin Pavlis, advocates of inclusivity and diversity in gaming, and they would add major, major nerds. When you're stressed out, all you want to do is let out the tension. Students at the Art of Living International Center for Meditation are doing just that through chanting exercises. In this sound portrait, yoga instructor Kasia Frazier discusses the benefits of releasing sound to our minds and bodies.
My name is Kasia Frazier. I have been teaching yoga for 7 years. While you are in yoga position, you can use the sound to let go of an emotion. So all the sounds, right? All those sounds are allowing the system to let go of any tension and emotion.
Let go.
In the group, first of all, it's acknowledging those energies in us. The other thing that is happening, that when we're doing it together, it brings the group together and creates the harmony and peace, not just within us, but also around us.
So don't be shy, just make that sound loud. One, two, one, two.
More relaxed than everything you do, it's just effortless, you know? And you can just experience yourself. You can take a deep breath. Right? And that sound is relaxing, it's refreshing.
That sound portrait was produced by Sarah Zahedi. On our new episode of Culture Clash, comedian Samir Suri takes aim at the yoga and meditation culture of Southern California. When even perfectly sensible clothes stores start calling their sweatpants yoga pants, our cultural correspondent has had enough.
spiritual therapy through yoga and meditation never worked for me. If I ever find my inner child, I'm having an abortion. LA doesn't seem to agree with me, though. Drive through Marina Del Rey or Santa Monica and you'll find more yoga centers and spiritual bookstores than Robin Thicke has strains of herpes. Walking into one of these yoga studios is like reading psychological profiles from a mental hospital. The first thing you'll notice is that there are no doors in the whole building, just beads. Curtains upon curtains of beads. I went into one of these yoga studios where the bathroom curtain was made of beads that looked like pills. You're wandering through the Courtney Love breakfast platter just to get in to wash your face. Then, if your feet don't sink irretrievably into the orange shag rugs, you might be able to walk past some of the books they're selling, and my god, Chain Men Tang's Search Inside Yourself, which sounds like a guide to self-colonoscopies. What books do you imagine will be showing up at these stores next? The Chi in Chicago, How Al Capone Found Inner Peace, The Savasana of the Lambs, Out Then and Again, The Placenta Cookbook. Go into a yoga class and you'll hear someone waxing ad nauseum about how India has a culture of peacefulness and centeredness. Once, while visiting New Delhi, I looked out my window and saw a man defecating onto the street next to a woman holding up a shrunken head and singing about Allah. If this is centeredness, what precisely would qualify as off-balance? Stay a little longer and you'll get a spiel about how it's possible to be interfaith, to believe in all faiths. Right. Because it makes perfect sense to believe simultaneously that Jesus was the Messiah, but also that he wasn't and we're still waiting for the Messiah to arrive, and also that he was actually just a prophet functioning as a warm-up act for Muhammad. These people should cut ads. The interfaith movement. So much of everything, it's nothing. At the end of the day, though, it is harmless. Yes, these people's concept of India is totally inconsistent with what India is actually like, but being inconsistent with what India is actually like also means no one has ever brought a shrunken head to my yoga class. Yes, being interfaith doesn't make sense, but it's better than India's current situation with religion, in which sectarian violence is tearing apart the country the way Michael Moore tears apart a 6-foot hero sandwich within 12 seconds of seeing it. At the end of the day, it is adorable. But also hilarious. I'm Samir Suri, and this is Culture Clash, Annenberg Radio News.
Now it's time to hear the sounds of another place that's uniquely Los Angeles.
Sonic City! Sonic City!
This is my second time here, and my boys always like to see trains, but it's a little bit disappointing today because a lot of things get kept off, you know, keep off, so they were not able to go up and down, so it was... It's good, you know, but it's a little bit disappointing for them. And also, there's a lot of shady area, and this is the first time we do a picnic. So, you know, my kids love picnics. So a picnic plus, getting on the train, jumping up and down, is a fabulous day for them.
Our next destination, Santa Barbara. All aboard!
Sonic City!
And now we're checking in with Jeremy Cento to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision.
Thanks, Carrie. Well, stories we're working on at ATVN, USC is tackling eating disorders with an event to help students be more confident about their body image. We'll have a special guest in studio to talk about it. This and more coming up at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision.
Great. Thanks, Jeremy.
No problem.
Tonight, USC will host its fifth annual startup Equinox. Tech geeks, entrepreneurs, and creative know-it-alls get together to share ideas in hopes of making their startup dreams a reality. The get-together is for anyone with a passion for innovation. Sydney Liu is one of the founders of Startup Talent Trail.
The unique thing about Startup Equinox is the fact that it doesn't just attract startup people. Like, you'll see events where it's just startup people every single time. This type of event just attracts everyone. Anyone who's even slightly interested in business, or not even business, just any major, will show up to these events. And that's really the cool part. You get to cater to a different audience. You get to meet a lot of cool people.
That's it for this Wednesday. We had help from Martha Daniel and Daniel Zhu. Our board operator is Derek Renfro. Camille Rocky-Estas is the newscast producer, and the executive producer is Victor Figueroa. For all us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Carrie Poppy.